since your last visit to Des Moines and performing with the Des Moines Symphony, what have you been up to with your career? You've done some amazing things.
Yeah, well, since I was last in Des Moines, a lot has happened in terms of my career, especially because it's been growing and I've been becoming busier and busier. And I always say that in music, especially, it's a privilege to be busy. So it's never a complaint. You know, it's always, I feel so lucky to be working so much. And it's a lot of work with different orchestras around the country. And the biggest project that I was involved in the last few years was the commissioning and the premiering of Lowell Lieberman's first cello concerto, which I did with a consortium of six different orchestras around the country. And that was something I've been trying to make happen for at least the past 6 years. And it finally came to fruition, and I was really so pleased with that. And then I've also, on another part of my life, I've become a professor of cello at Shenandoah University. And that has really given me such satisfaction, I guess, and has also taught me so much about my instrument, about how I perform and how I play, and has been, I think, an equal learning experience for me and my students. And so that's another part of my life that has been growing, and I feel it all feeds into itself, and I'm very happy.
And next year, you're going to be doing a recording series for the Milken Archive.
Yes, the recording I did for the Milken Archive actually already took place, but it's available electronically, and it is the music of Ernest Bloch, who was a very prominent Swiss-American composer who wrote a lot of Jewish-influenced music, and the Milken Archive of American Jewish Music is actually completed at this time, but some of my recordings were their last in the series, so I feel very fortunate to have worked with them.
Tell us about this amazing work that you're going to be playing with the Des Moines Symphony Orchestra, and you also have a violist at your side as well.
Yes, the work is Don Quixote by Richard Strauss, and it is one of the most magical pieces written with the cello as a soloist or a solo obbligato. And what I love about it is that it's a real narrative work. I feel that the cello as an instrument is often the protagonist or is often the subject of a story or a speaker or has a big monologue in cello concertos. I was recently playing the Shostakovich First Concerto. That's a real work where you're taking the listener on a journey and the cello is sort of in the fore. The Dvorak Concerto is another one that comes to mind. The Elgar is another. It seems that when composers write for the cello as a solo instrument, it's often that the cello is speaking and telling some kind of story. In Don Quixote, it's probably the most like that, which is that Richard Strauss uses the cello as an actual character, the Don Quixote from the book by Cervantes. So it's the cellist as Don Quixote, the viola as his sidekick, Sancho Panza, and all of the various travels and expeditions and various trouble they get in together. And they do it through variations. So Richard Strauss uses motives. There's a motive for Don Quixote. There's a motive for Sancho Panza. And I mean musical motives now. And he uses the variation form. So every conquest Don Quixote has is a different variation. And it's the storytelling that unfolds of his life. And I get to do that along with my partners in crime.
So it starts out, and I guess you attack the windmills in the first variation.
Yes, there are various stories such as attacking the windmills and imagining that they are oncoming armies. And there is a moment when he meets priests, and there is a moment where he meets sheep in a pasture. And Strauss creates all of these moments in the story in music. So when you hear the sheep, you'll hear various woodwinds making sheep noises. And it's very evocative, and it's really genius how he makes all of these literary devices come to life musically. And that's what he was known most for in his career and his use of programmatic music, which is using pure notes to describe things that happen in stories.
What is your most favorite moment in this work?
My most favorite, it's difficult because there's so many wonderful moments for the cello and for Don Quixote. I would have to say that it is the finale, the great finale. So after all of the the happenings of Don Quixote's excursions. He becomes ill and is dying. And that is the finale. And I am still trying to represent his heroism while expressing the final words of a dying man. And it's very special for me to do that, especially how Strauss writes it. And the harmonies and the textures, it's one of the greatest moments ever written for cello, I think, in the whole of the repertoire. And then there's a moment where Don Quixote awakens from his slumber and thinks that he is alive and well again. And he jumps up and has a moment of this realization that he's back in it. And I need to express that, only for him to realize again that he is dying. And his final breaths are a long glissando down to one of the lowest notes on the cello, the last bit of air that comes out of his lungs. And so for me, that is one of the most evocative moments, and it's so, so special. Yeah, I think my last statement will be that last gasp of Don Quixote as he passes away.
So tell us about your cello.
My cello is a very special instrument made by Gennaro Galliano in Naples in 1743. And Gennaro Galliano was the foremost maker of the Galliano string-making family, which was multi-generations. His brother was a little more famous than he, Niccolo. That's just because he made more instruments. Gennaro was a skilled copyist or mimic, so he made a lot of Stradivarius instruments with Stradivarius labels that were actually made by Gennaro Galliano, and they're still turning up. So he was much less prolific than Niccolo and slightly less famous, but is considered to be the finest of the family. He only made 18 cellos, and I'm lucky enough to play on one, and it's a gorgeous tone. And it really is exactly what I need in terms of, if I want to make a color, it is able to make that color with me. So in some ways, the better you get as a string player, the better tool you need to be able to meet you at that level. So I feel like I have the perfect partner. Now, my bow, on the other hand, is made by an American maker, and it was given to me by my parents when I was 10 years old as my first full-size cello bow. And I've been trying to find a better one, and I really can't. And it's made by Paul Martin Seyfried, who is a part of this little bow maker's colony in Port Townsend, Washington, on the Olympic Peninsula, if you can imagine. And there are about 7 or 8 great American bow makers that all live in this little town, and all of their students flock to study with them. So Paul Martin Seyfried is my favorite maker of those, and I have 2 of his bows, but the one I'll be playing in this performance is the first one I ever played. And I feel like it gets better and better.
You grew up in a very musical family and a very influential family. Tell us about your background.
I grew up in Seattle, Washington, because my father at the time was the music director of the Seattle Symphony. And his name's Gerard Schwartz, and the first time I came to Des Moines was actually with him. And the Des Moines Symphony has an American guest conductor that comes every year, which I think is really fantastic for the city and for the orchestra. And one year it was my father, and he asked to bring me, and that's how my relationship with the orchestra started. So I've been playing with my father, and of course, my whole childhood was spent listening to his concerts. And in Seattle, they used to do 4 performances a week. I would go to all of them, and I just couldn't get enough of it. And so that was sort of my hobby, was hearing classical music. And so there was that side of it. But the most musical side of my family is actually my mother's, which surprises many people. She comes from a multi-generational musical family. So both of her parents went to Juilliard. Her father was the principal viola of the New York Philharmonic. And there's actually an old recording at the Waterloo Festival, which is a festival my father started in Stanhope, New Jersey, which no longer exists. But at the time, my grandfather, Saul Greitzer, who was the principal viola of the New York Philharmonic, came there as a teacher and played in the orchestra. And there's a video of my father conducting, Nathaniel Rosen playing the cello part, and my grandfather all doing Don Quixote together. And that's a recording I cherish. And of course, my grandfather playing the part of Sancho Panza. So there's that connection to these performances as well. And in my family, now it is 10 or 11 members of my family that have attended the Juilliard School. And two of my cousins are actually still there, finishing out their Bachelor of Music degrees. And I'm always trying to play with my cousins, and I'm in a chamber group with one and presented another chamber concert with another clarinetist. And so it's, for me, the family business side of it is so fun because it's very rare, you know, in law and in food and in so many industries, there are many things that are and sons or and daughters, and there's that type of legacy. But in music, it's very rare, especially in classical music, when it's so difficult to really make a substantial career doing it, it's so rare to have so many members of a family all in the same world. And so at Thanksgivings and at Jewish holidays, we often end up in jam sessions of sorts, and everybody playing and singing, and it's very special, and I'm very lucky to have so many talented people in my family.
That sounds like so much fun, to be able to have these family jam sessions, like you just said, and I was thinking that at Juilliard, all the practice rooms must have one of your family members' names on it.
It's very funny you mentioned that. Nothing like that, but there was an article a few years ago in the Juilliard Journal highlighting family legacies at the Juilliard School, and they did them with family trees, sort of, or webs, you might say. And there were so few of them that they could find that even some two people that got married that both went to Juilliard had their little web, and then in the middle was our family, which was sort of obnoxiously large. And I don't know what about Juilliard. There's so many great music schools in the world and in the country and so many different places where you can have a great education. But something about that place seems like we all sort of, at least for a year or a degree or something, had our time there.
It's been wonderful having you today and hearing you talk about this Don Quixote piece and also about your career and your background. And is there anything else that you would like to add about coming back to Des Moines or that you have on the horizon?
I wanted to mention that I'm not only so lucky to play a lot and to visit different places in the world, but I'm also lucky to be able to make connections and to establish real rapport with different artistic communities in this country. And sometimes it's more profound than others. And I feel like in Des Moines, when I was first here, it's so rare that when there's a guest conductor, the music director actually comes and is involved. And Joe Junta showed up to my concerts and was so warm to me and so inviting and said that we must do something in the future. And this is that he has asked me to do. And so I feel so privileged to be coming back, especially in his 30th season. And for a music director these days, to have that type of longevity is almost unheard of. And that's why the orchestra sounds so great, which is that there's been consistent artistic leadership for such a long time and his investment in the community. So for me to come and to see orchestral players that I remember from last time and for me to be reunited with this great artistic community and with Maestro Junta, my first time working with him, in fact, it's very special for me, though a little less busy downtown than last time when I was here during the caucuses. But that's what I'd like to add, is just how much fun it is for me to be back here.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and best wishes in your career, Julian, and have fun with this performance this weekend.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.